Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. This podcast has been away for a couple of months, but we've got some exciting interviews lined up on the show in the coming weeks. So, as they say in radio, lock your dial on Tech Central. Now, I'm really looking forward to talking to my next guest. His name is Herman Maritz. You might not have heard of Herman, but I can almost guarantee that you have heard of his app, which we'll get into in just a moment. First, though, Herman, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Duncan, thank you so much. First thing I just want to say is I'm a big fan of yours and what you've been accomplishing over the years. I, as you know, I told you your email did not come through; it went to spam. So I was searching for Duncan email on my Gmail, and I saw my first email to you was 10 years ago. And I was like, wow, okay, hey, I think it was a company in Stellenbosch called FireID 10 years ago that closed, and I emailed you about that. And it's like 10 years I've been following you. I remember when this podcast in its previous incarnation, I think you were, like, you had Simon Dingle and those guys on, and there was
the ZA Tech Show.
Yeah, in the ZA Tech Show. I was following that every week, and talking to you today is quite cool. And another thing is I know, I think if I remember correctly, you also introduced me to the band called Riverside, which I'm a big fan of. So,
fantastic.
Really, really cool to talk to you today.
Well, that's great. I'm still a fan of Riverside, and they're still doing music. So I hope you're still still
through.
Polish band, if I remember correctly.
Really? Okay, I missed that part. But
They're from Poland. Mariusz Duda, I think, is his name. They're out of
Not a big fan, as big a fan as you. But,
cool. but great band, and it's good to finally touch base with you, Herman, because I've actually been wanting to chat to you and your colleague Dan Wells, who unfortunately couldn't make the podcast today. But
He's too busy, right? He has too many Zoom calls. I'll be honest with you. Usually, Dan does these things. Like, he's sort of the guy that we do this with, because I'm not as smooth as him, so I'm guessing we'll have a fun ride. I didn't ask you before if swearing is allowed, but I'll try not to.
Apparently there are rules about Apple in particular around their podcasting platform. So we've submitted as a family podcast. So if there are a few F-bombs, we might get kicked off there. So we probably better keep it clean.
So we'll stick to crap. Crap, I think, is okay.
I think we can get away with that and a bit of maybe a BS or two, but probably beyond that.
I'll try my best to not get you kicked off the platform. I have a tendency to sometimes let that happen. Dan is usually the one that's a little bit more into these things, or at least I asked him to do that, but today is too busy. So I'm talking to you, and it's, like I said, it's a real privilege.
Well, his loss and your gain. So thanks so much for chatting to us. And I'm going to have to say the app name carefully too, to avoid getting kicked off the Apple App Store. If you haven't figured out by now, if you haven't figured out by now, Herman is a co-developer of the wildly popular app Eskom's Push, which of course is used by literally millions of South Africans whenever there is load shedding. And I'm always amazed, Herman, when I follow Eskom on Twitter and I see them tweeting load shedding is going to start today at 5 p.m. I immediately go to my Eskom Push app on my phone, fire it up, and it's already updated. How do you do it so quickly?
Well, a lot of scraping. That's the first thing. We actually do have a relationship with Eskom that we've built over the years. So it's not like we don't talk to them ever. It's like we've had a few meetings with them, and they're also very friendly. And I think we're actually part of their distribution list also for media and things like that. They're quite cool. But mostly the Twitter feed is actually quite good and they're updating it quite fast on when they made their decisions. Definitely a lot of scraping Twitter, their like different websites, things like that. And then also like manual work, right? First one to say Dan does a lot of carrying on that. He's amazing and also sort of like following that. And then we rely heavily on Slack. So all our integrations are on Slack. So is there any decision to be made about is there load shedding or not? Like maybe there will be all of these things. It's all sort of processed with Slack, and we get sort of a feed on that. And then we make decisions about when it's a good time or not. So, of course, we really don't want to do fake news. So it's really important that we feel strongly that it will be. We did a little bit of a joke on April Fools because we just wanted to. Other than that, we really try to get the right information to people.
I missed that. What was your April Fools joke?
Well, we send a push notification saying there's no load shedding today. just so that a few people would get a scare about there might be, but there wasn't. So luckily, we were thinking if there is, we're going to look like total idiots. But luckily, there weren't. So
Great stuff. I was going to ask about your relationship with Eskom. I mean, the name of the app is a little controversial, I guess. Was there any pushback from Eskom when you launched? Did they have any views on their trademark being used, for example, or were they pretty happy with it?
I mean, there's no official comment on that ever. We like I said, we've got like literally, I want to say 100, but at least a lot of people from Eskom have contacted over the years, even to tell us, hey, this schedule is wrong or something like that. So we really do work well with them, and they've been supporting. And I think they also get the joke, right? It's not like they don't get it. It's not like they're in the ideal situation. They also want to have this solved. And if this is solving something and, to be honest, also taking a little bit of the heat off them, it helps them. So yeah. I think it's a good relationship, and it's something we want to keep. And it's very funny always when I think there was some commission, and I forgot what it was about. I guess it was some state capture thing or something with tenders or Eskom. I forgot the inquiry that was, or the commission that happened. And literally on the first page of that statement, it said something about the South Africans were very negative about load shedding. The top app was Eskom Sepush. That really set the sentiment. And I was like, wow, okay, that's like getting to that level. It's quite cool.
That's nice. Who came up with the name?
I don't know who came up with the name. What I do know is how it was inspired, right? So what I can say is like Dan and I worked at a company called Intersect about, mm-hmm. 7 years ago? Anyway, and we worked a lot with banks. So we at that point, we were building the Nedbank app and the Capitec app. And like, by the way, if you want to talk to people on the podcast, recommend talking to the Intersect guys, Skulk and them. They're really cool people.
I think we've had Skulk on before.
But yeah, actually. So yeah. Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'll go after listen at that one. That's awesome. So we worked on a lot of these things, and we've had a lot of conference calls with banks, and, something that we were working on at the time was push notifications, right? So we had a lot of calls about when this push notification coming through. It's sort of a best effort service. So it's not always coming through, especially back then, which is like 7 years ago. It was really best effort. So if you send it, it won't always arrive. These days it's quite good, but back then it was like shaky. But anyway, especially between Apple push notification service and Google Cloud Messaging, as it was called back then. But, in these calls, especially with, let me say it, Capitec, with very Afrikaans guys, there were sometimes they would say push notifications in a very funny Afrikaans accent. And we had to sort of mute then and have a nice chuckle before. I hope they don't take this personally. But it was extremely funny. And it was something that, of course, then inspired, because this is in 2014, right? So we were really also dealing with load shedding. Load shedding started basically in 2014. I'm not sure if there was before. I don't remember if there was any before 2014, and specifically the end of 2014. And we wanted to sort of, when load shedding started, and we were working at a startup, it's like you have to decide, am I going home or am I staying a bit longer? Mm-hmm. And that sort of the idea is like, okay, why go home if the power is going to be off? Just let's stay a little longer. And that's sort of where it started. We used a service called Push Bullet back then, which was quite cool, of sending like stuff on API to push notifications. So it was cool. And then we added it to Twitter, and then we got more people following on Twitter and sort of interested in this push notification service. And I particularly at that time I was doing a lot of prototypes for banks, for apps. And it was like a no-brainer to build a quick app to do these push notifications that people can download from the store. And I remember we used a framework called Ionic. And this is sort of a Cordova phone gap type framework, which you write once in JavaScript, and then it goes to iOS and Android. So super, super lean, right? Like frugal as possible. Mm-hmm. And we published to the store, and then it grew from there. It was quite cool. And it was nice to see it grow. And back then there was like a lot of load shedding apps. I don't know if you remember, there was one called Gridwatch. That Media 24 or Naspers were driving. Gridwatch was huge. And also we had a really cool competition with them, because they was Naspers. They had all this backing. They had like ads all over the place, because they had to get money in. We had no ads like that. Like, we were like anti-establishment. We're going to show the man. We're going to do this stupid, no ads. We hate ads. Like, I still hate ads, but maybe more on that later. So then we added that, and the name, with your back, the name was definitely something that got the adoption, right? Because people were like, that's funny. But also, I think it sort of made an ethos for us where, well, hey, we would like load shedding sucks. Like nobody likes load shedding, but maybe we can have some fun with this and at least make it a little bit more bearable.
So how big is the app now? How many active users does it have? How many downloads have you had in total? And how have you had to scale your backend to cope with demand?
Yeah, so I guess there's a lot of interesting stories there. But I think last time I checked, and I actually went to look the numbers, the numbers are up here. That's why I'm looking here. So the last time, the number of downloads is a bit complicated because it's also sort of not something we're tracking, but we are tracking how many active users we have. So in the last, like in a normal load shedding day, like we have a daily active users of 1.8 million connected.
Wow.
So that's sort of on a load shedding day. And then we're checking on active installs. We've got 2.6 million active installs. So that's probably because people have multiple devices and iPad and stuff like that. So that's why it's probably inflated on the number of active installs. And then on a normal day, which luckily does not have load shedding, it's about 60,000 users. So, so that's sort of the system we have. And the question about scaling the systems, it's quite interesting, right? Because when we started the project, we didn't like have a lot of money, right? We were working a startup. It's not like we had some money in the pocket to invest into this. So we went super frugal. It's like one of those things, like we were using the cheapest hosting you can find on the internet with like the free tier of everything, including the CDN. So for example, we used Cloudflare CDN for a long time. I think we might still do. I don't know. Dan would know better, We were using the cheapest stuff, but we were trying to stay frugal, and that's still today. We did a calculation the other day, and basically we pay $12 per million sessions. So we are like running the app is not very expensive for us, and I'm very proud of that because it's something that that's sort of there from the beginning to stay frugal. And as for the scaling, the problem with Eskom Shapush is, like I said, you have like normal days we don't have a lot of traffic, and then all of a sudden Eskom announces there's like stage two coming, and then you have got 900,000 connections, basically. I actually wrote it down where that peak was. Yeah, it was 900,000 connections per second, and then like normal, like our CDN was detecting this as a denial of service attack. Distributed denial of, so they just blocked the connection saying there's something bad happening here, like stop it. So a while ago, I think it was probably in 2019, we had some big problems with scaling to that. But luckily on this part, I hopefully say Dan works at a company or worked that time at a company that dealt a lot with sort of Black Friday scaling issues.
Right.
So he was really able to solve that for Eskom Shapush based on also, and hopefully also he took that Eskom Shapush knowledge to also solve other problems. But yeah, he did amazing work to do that. And I remember, we put in the app like thanks Dan the Man, like hashtag Dan the Man, and Dan the Man got to trending in South Africa, so that was pretty cool for me to get my friend to actually be trending. But yeah, shout out to Dan, like he's amazing.
Yeah, but I imagine that it's a lot easier now to deal with those scaling issues with. And I don't know where you're hosted today, but with Amazon and Microsoft and Elastic Cloud resources where you can literally just scale up compute as you need it. I imagine it's a lot easier to do in 2021 than it was back in 2014.
Yeah, 100%. So we're totally on Google Cloud now. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's also that easy to make that calculation about how much it's costing, because we can literally see the number of sessions and then the total cost on our budget on Google Cloud.
Yes.
But yeah, it's super easy. And we also are using serverless, or their what they call Google Cloud function. So basically, it's not having anything really, like it's running very very easily for us. Very very easy. Also, Firebase is an amazing product by Google. I think anyone starting a new startup want to try out Firebase is the thing that I would recommend. Also to that, our app is now not an Ionic anymore, because that's maybe an interesting story. So in 2015, there was a lot of load shedding. If you look at the history, 2015 was a horrible year. I have a note here about the number of hours. It was 60 days of load shedding in 2015. It was a really bad year for load shedding. In fact, 2020 was the second worst, and that was half of that. So, So yeah, it's 2015 was an amazing year to grow Escom Sapush, and that's also why GridWatch and all of those other apps were sort of in that space, because there was actually a real problem to solve. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
By the way, shout out to Catherine Reese if she's listening. But what I want to say, so we won like two app awards that year from the MTN. Actually, on Tech Central, if you go look at tags for Escom Sapush, I think that's the one that's there. It's quite cool. Yeah, it was very nice. I think we won People Choice and Breakthrough Developer, which I also thought that Breakthrough Developer is not fair, because actually the year before NetBank app won, and I was like, okay, I actually worked on that one too. But
yeah, yeah.
So what I wanted to get to here is then after 2015, load shedding stopped. There was no load shedding. So we went on with our merry lives. We were not very sad that load shedding stopped. Of course, it was a nice thing and it was growing, but we're not really sad that load shedding stops, to be honest. It's impactful to our lives as well. But then in 2018, it came up again. Like, there was like, magically we got a notification on our phone saying stage one. No, not prepared. Like, the servers are still running. The app was not, because I did not renew the App Store and Play Store, did not like click on the policy permissions and stuff. So the app was gone from the stores, but the server was still running, and we got the notification saying, hey, there's going to be load shedding. And it was quite difficult because the app was written in JavaScript, and JavaScript sucks. Like, it does not age well. like that framework was not good. Like, honestly, I have real respect for people that work on front ends, because for me, it's a really, really difficult language. But I did not have time to really work on the app back then, because I used to work more on the app and Dan more on the back end. But Dan then decided to take it on himself to write the app in Flutter. And the reason I bring this up is because I said Firebase is quite cool for a startup, but also Flutter. Flutter is an amazing product from Google to do cross-platform apps. They also support web and desktop apps. Really, if you're building anything these days, I would highly recommend Flutter.
Can you develop iOS apps on it as well?
Yeah. iOS, Android, web. I would say the web part is maybe not as good as the rest, but also desktop. And they support Linux, Mac, Windows. It's a great, great framework. I definitely recommend it.
Okay. So it's been completely rebuilt in Flutter, and it's running that today.
Yeah, it's completely rebuilt in Flutter since 2018, and it's running there today. Yeah. It's even now on Flutter 2, I think. So, well, I know I did it. But yeah, it's quite cool.
Now, you and Dan don't do this full time. You actually have jobs that you work on. What industries are you in? What are your passions personally as a developer?
Oh, so Dan and I, we both work sort of in e-commerce space. Okay. We're both managers, right? So I don't say day to day. We're not touching tech day to day.
Right.
So that's also where Escom Sapush comes in, because we are actually like keeping our muscles strong, our engineering muscles strong, by actually, you know, developing things, because most of the time we're developing people or working through people. Mm-hmm. I think we're, at least I can speak to myself, I guess. Luckily, I get quite good feedback that I'm not too bad as a manager. So it also means I'm sticking with it, right? So I'm enjoying people management a lot and sort of driving product, something I enjoy. That's sort of the thing. I still work with apps, yes, but it's not my day to day. It's more on the organizational and strategies. I think that's for me. That's something for me to figure out about the industry and things, because I'm interested in so many things. Currently, I have a baby who is now probably a toddler. He's 1 year old. I'm thinking about education, right? Because I'm one of these people that I think remote work is really going to be the future. I can just sense that, especially now with the pandemic. I think it's going to get more and more people would like to have that freedom and flexibility to work. And I think education is one of not ready for that. And I'm really, really interested in that. And so I'm exploring that at the moment to see if there's any potential there. I'm really into logistics and supply chain as well, which is like totally something totally different, but I just feel like industry is so. Yeah, but then like from, at least on my side, not the same for Dan, but on my side, I'm more on the sort of the front end side, I would like to say, not the actual how to get stuff.
Right.
I'm really interested in this like shipping containers, right? That industry, there's a book I read recently called The Box. I'm not sure if you've read it, but wow, it's like, from the shipping container has probably made the biggest impact on people's quality of life around the world, right? Because you can ship stuff very, very cheaply. I think we've gone too far. The other day I was in Checkers and I saw there's garlic from China. And I'm like, you can grow, there's space to grow garlic here. Why is there garlic from China? I don't get it. But because it's so cheap to ship, that's why. It's really, really cheap. And I think there's, unfortunately, even though it's really cheap to ship, it's maybe not so sustainable as for greenhouse gases and these sort of things and climate change, but also it's very paper heavy and old, right? It's an old industry, and I think there's a lot of I'm really into this topic, so like unloading a ship, it takes 8 hours. So you've got like a $1 billion asset sitting there, and it takes 8 hours to unload. And I think there's so much potential there to improve things.
There's
a lot of stuff for that.
You spoke about shipping, and it's a little bit off topic, but when the Ever Given ship got stuck in the Suez Canal, I actually went onto one of these marine traffic websites to have a look at the Suez Canal area, but just have a look at the planet generally, and the number of cargo ships that are circling this planet at any given moment is quite frightening. And it's a sign of globalization. But that Ever Given ship, the size of that thing, I mean, I read the statistics about how many containers it could carry and the weight it could carry and its length, and the scale of it is just unbelievable. I mean, you say $1 billion, I think that ship could easily, I mean, if it's carrying valuable freight like smartphones, yes, could carry 10, 20, 30 billion dollars.
Yeah, no, totally. The fact is here that there's definitely space to really, really innovate in that industry, because it's one of the things we heavily rely on. And I also just feel like, it's like if you work back from the customer, right, which is what the Jeff Bezos would always say, if you really, like, people will always want stuffly. There's never going to be a time where they won't have, like, even if you really, really care about a lot of stuff like I do, or like really care about the environment, you still want to get stuff cheap. Yeah. And I think that, like, getting that, like working in that is going to be something that really matters. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, globalization is like probably one of the biggest forces we have on that. Mm-hmm. Because in the old days, you have to, if you wanted a suit, you have to go get from the tailor that is down the street and, or in the same area and go get it. These days you can get it from Italy very, very easily, right? Yeah. No matter where you are in the world. And I think that is insane. It's something weird. It's not normal.
Now, you mentioned the environment.
We take it for granted.
I mean, the world is moving now towards electric cars, it really does look like the internal combustion engine is coming to its end in motor vehicles. But then you look at the global shipping industry, and those ships spew out the most amazing amount of greenhouse gases and pollution on a daily basis. But, if we're solving the emissions problem in vehicles, what are we going to do about the airline industry and the shipping industry? Because those are much worse than the
There are actually regulations coming in for that. There are some strong regulations. And the interesting thing is what are they going to do? Because they can go slower. That's, of course, a good option. But that's not what people want. They want stuff fast. So you don't want them to go slower. The other way, which I don't think is really necessarily going to solve it, is sort of offsetting, right? So paying for carbon tax, for example. But that's not really solving the problem. Even though I studied electronic engineering and stuff, I don't know if will it actually work to get an electric engine on those ships. I don't know. Maybe personal opinion here, but nuclear power, that might be an option. I'm not sure. I feel always that might have been that we didn't invest as much on that as we have in the past.
Nuclear powered ships. Now there's an idea. I wanted to, you mentioned the pandemic a few minutes ago. I wanted to ask a bit about, because you guys brought in COVID stats into the app for a period of time, and it was actually very useful to look at that graph. I think it showed the, was it the number of active cases or the total cases in that graph that you had inside the app? I can't remember now.
I mean, we changed it over time as people give us feedback. We say, oh yeah, can you put in the active cases or can you add the vaccinations as well? And I was like, yeah, cool, we added that. We really, like, in the app, we have this email functionality, and boy, people use that. Like, that's something really, really active. So yeah, we added that, it's quite cool. And unfortunately, we got a lot of negative feedback when we added that in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, like, first thing is not like sort of deniers of Corona, which is, Anyway, let's not go into politics. A lot of them out there. I don't know. It's like this is the worst conspiracy ever. If they're right, I am sure they're not. So.
Of course they're not.
But the same with the vaccines. But anyway, I don't want to talk about it because I get grumpy. So we added the stats and unfortunately Google, they don't like it when you add the stats. Like they want you to have the official sort of, official capacity. So we contacted the NICD, which is anyway where we get the stats from, right? It's not like we made up the stats. We actually get it from the official source. They publish it as a media statement. So we are allowed to sort of use that. So we asked them, hey, we've got a lot of users in the app. And also we actually enabled a setting where you can get push notifications with the COVID numbers. Not all the users, only the ones that subscribed. And it was about 100,000 people that actually wanted that. So that's cool that people actually wanted that. But unfortunately, the NICD never really got back to us. So we removed it from the app because we don't really want to like push too much the button. Actually, the app got banned from the store on a Sunday.
I was going to ask about that. Was that Google or Apple?
Yeah. No, it was Google.
Google.
It was Google. Mm-hmm. But also Google, the funny thing is, they didn't say it was because of the Corona thing. So we have this chat functionality in the app. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we added the chat functionality because a lot of people think like we want to be like WhatsApp or something like that. Of course not. Like, no. Like, definitely not. WhatsApp is a great product, even though it's Facebook now. We added a chat because we get so many emails when there's no load shedding telling us your schedule is wrong. I'm having load shedding. And it's not load shedding. It's like a local outage, like a municipality problem. Yeah. Yeah. And we added chat and specifically nearby chat so that people can sort of talk to each other and just say, hey, is your power out? Yeah, my power is out. Okay, I'll call someone. Because it's sort of just making it easier for people to solve problems. And we've seen some cool stuff on there, like people saying, I was playing that trumpet, you're making the noise and things like that. So I think some people are getting some value out of that, but it was never meant to sort of be a chat room or something like that. It was more about problem solving. As part of that, Google said we needed a way to report content. And we had a button saying report user. Mm-hmm. So we were reporting the content, but the label was saying report user. So then Google banned the app. And I was thinking on a Sunday, like ruining my Sunday for that was really stupid. Mm. Like I was really upset about that. But I mean, it's one of those things. Luckily we appealed and.
I didn't realize it was over such a silly thing. I thought it had something to do with the COVID numbers that you were publishing and it was in violation of Google's COVID rules or something.
No, the interesting thing is as soon as we said, okay, we fixed this button to now say not report user, but report, they said, oh, and this Corona stuff, you're not allowed. So there was like, that was sort of the second step. And then we just removed that and say, okay, let's just get that back up.
Yeah.
And since then we've moved those stats to Twitter. So we're publishing it now on Twitter. And I think since starting it, like we already have like 1,500 followers on that Twitter account. So that's cool. I think people are having some value there.
Yeah.
And it's the same stat as NICD. It's just a little bit different format, right? It's all about, because that's also the thing with Ace Comes to Push. It's not like people don't, like they can go and look at all the Excel sheets and the PDFs, but it's just easier in the app. And that's the same thing we wanted to do with the COVID stats. It's just make it a little bit easier to process because it's a lot of information to process.
Yes. Yes. Interesting. So you mentioned the chat community. It's a location-based chat community. So you chat with people. Yep. Based on your device location. Has it turned into a platform where people just talk about anything?
There are some people. There are some people that regulars that come back and just like they chat like it's a WhatsApp group. Like actually it reminds me of an IRC in the old days. It reminds me of that where people are just coming in and talking nonsense. It's quite cool, but it was never meant to do that. Yeah. That was not the purpose, but it's cool that people are using it.
So has anyone got married through this platform yet?
Could be. Like there are some times where it's a little bit, I don't want to say it, like you can sense there's some romance or emotion in there. And I mean, positive emotion and a lot of times negative emotion as well. But a lot of times I sense that there's some stuff between the lines there.
Yeah. Interesting. Right. So, Herman, where do you go next with the app? Do you maintain it as it is? Do you see opportunities to offer additional services through the app? Maybe maybe let's touch on the advertising stuff here. Do you think there's an opportunity maybe for a paid-for version that removes advertising? What's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, so again, we're doing this as a hobby, right? So the plan was never to make money out of it. It was more about helping and also solving a problem. But when Dan was redoing the app in Flutter in 2018, he added ads to the app. So blame Dan, everyone. and you can find him on Twitter, like find Dan, blame him for the ads. Like, yeah, hashtag blame Dan. but also that made him de facto CFO, right? Because now he had to deal with tax and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's the only thing we do outsource in that. Everything in that app, like marketing, anything is done by me or Dan, except the taxes that we do outsource.
Okay.
Because we really suck at that. So thanks Dan for being CFO. So we added the ads and we are getting some money in now. It's also why we could be able to move to Google and build a little bit more stable system. So I'm very happy with that. Thanks Dan for doing that. As for the future, so one of the things we do have is we do have a paid API. It's not something we really advertise, but there are some companies that rely on us sending them like their own private sort of business API that we give them, with some special features like GPS for areas. And some of the use cases are like they're having outages and they want to know if there's load shedding. So then they can check the API to make sure, so it's not like a false alarm or something. They know there's something happening there. So that's something we do. It's very, very on specific basis. And also, like, we ask a lot of money for it, to be honest. But it's one of those things that it's not, we are really offering our time there. So it's like premium support, right? So it's that's sort of why it's so expensive. I think more than that for the app, I think we're like Eskom Shapush will stay for load shedding. We have tried like adding a little bit more of a general reporting, like water outages and stuff like that. We did some experiments, not for our entire user base, but just for some to see if there would be like interest in that. But also the more and more features we add, the more and more time it takes for me and Dan from our jobs, right? So we really want to solve that problem in the right way and not veer too far off from the load shedding use case. However, like I said, we're interested in a lot of stuff and maybe in the future we'll use Eskom Shapush to as a launch pad to launch other stuff. But right now I think we want to improve the schedules and stuff like that. One thing we really want to do is move all the schedules to something like GitHub where it's open, where anyone can be doing anything with the schedules. It's one of the things that we were working on, especially when when municipalities change, like City Power, the other day they changed schedules. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was really, really painful because there was so much confusion. And the point here is I think it would be cool to open source that and where others can contribute to the actual schedules. The biggest pain we have in the app is loading the schedules because every municipality is doing it in a different style, in a different format, in a different, like some Excel, some like a website, I don't even know, like a Google Doc. It's very strange.
How many different data points are you actually working with?
It's a good question. I don't know. Too many.
Tens of thousands.
it's insane, and it's honestly a pain, and that's the part. And in the end, it's the customers that suffer, right? They have like confusion about this. I today, as I sit here, still do not know if the Potchefstroom schedule is correct or not, because looking at the website that they have, it doesn't look right to me. So, and we get complaints, but then also what do? So we send out emails to people that we know that might be able to solve that. But unfortunately, I still don't have a good feeling about that one. This is again where that feedback we get from people with the emails, or so many emails that sort of help us in identifying problems and making sure there's quality in the product. We also, other thing that was really quite cool is we recently published the history of load shedding over the years since 2015, because we've been keeping a log. And that's also something we have on our business API, sort of the history of that. But we actually decided to publicly publish Excel file with the history, and there's so many cool things that came out of that. Like the Reserve Bank did some analysis on that using the data. The CSIR has done some analysis, and it was really cool. Like we just published it for like let's see what happens, and then a bunch of people do some cool stuff. And we see a lot of scrapers in our API as well, which we're okay with, sort of. Like, it's fine. We actually, there's a lot of other load shedding apps that are also great, and we're actually, like, if we can help them also, that's cool. It's not like we're in a competition anymore, I feel. We'd like to contribute to that.
If the right offer came along, if Eskom or someone else came along to you guys and said, hey, we're interested in buying this app, would you consider selling it?
Actually, the other day we were contacted by somebody that said Eskom is having a tender for a load shedding app, and if we would like to sort of be part of that. I found that to be quite strange, so because Eskom, we have a relationship with them, I'm sure they would have contacted, so we didn't reply because we are thinking maybe that's something, somebody hustler or something. If you're not, I'm sorry if not taking you seriously, but we get a lot of these sort of emails and things.
Yeah.
So, that's something that definitely I think we would like to help out and things. So one of the things that I would love to give to Eskom or sell to them if possible is actually the customer support side of things. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, we get all of these emails and things, and we have the Slack integrations that really just channel all of that to actually sort of filter them out. And okay, look at these areas. There's a problem in these areas. Which is something that I found extremely interesting, right? And this is where, again, the data really comes in about, okay, you know, even though there's not load shedding, these people from these areas are complaining that there is a problem. And then, okay, let's check. Definitely would like to sell, and it's a great, great platform, but also it's like a love project, so I'm not sure people can afford it.
Well, Eskom, if you're listening, there you go. Give Herman a call. Great. Well, Herman, I think we'll leave it there. Fascinating conversation. Fantastic app. I know everyone where I live uses it, and I'm sure it's a catch right across the country. Really great to get some insights into what it took to develop it and some of the numbers behind it. What is your Twitter handle if anyone wants to give you a follow?
Oh, it's at Hermaret. Just Google me. You'll find me. I don't like how to put it. It's at H-E-R-M Maritz. I got it. It's fine.
Okay.
You'll find it.
Just Google Herman Maritz. You'll find him.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
All right. Let me include a link to your Twitter bio in the entry on the website.
Oh, that's
well.
Nice. Yes. Thank you, Duncan.
That might make things easier. Herman Maritz is, what do I call you? Co-developer, co-founder of Eskom Sapush?
Co-creator
of of Eskom Sapush, yes. with Dan Wells, who we will get on a podcast at some point in the future, I'm sure.
I feel like I've not talked that much about how cool Dan is, right? Like, without Dan, I would have given up on this like so long ago. He's really the balance in that makes this work, right? Like, the two of us, just the one, it won't work. Like, Dan.
Yeah. And that's so often, so often with projects in the tech sector. I mean, Apple wouldn't be the same without Steve Wozniak, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Herman, thanks so much for taking the time. Thanks for talking to Tech Central again. Much appreciated.
And thank you to you again. Thanks.